Well, good evening to all of you, and I'm delighted that you could come out tonight. History in making. Most of the time we think history in terms of relics, monuments, and we read about it without realizing that modern history, you and I are part of it. Can you imagine if John and Peter did not preach and they went home and they said, oh, there is too much trouble. We are not interested. Why should we risk our lives? Would this church be here today? It won't be. If the reformers didn't stand up against Catholicism, would we be here today? Would we have the doctrines of grace? We would not. Today you may not think that you're part of history, but you are. And if you and I save this generation, and the generations to come are going to pay the price. I almost feel like Jeremiah, telling people what they don't want to hear. Please tell us something nice. Tell me something encouraging. I have had a very hard day at work. Life is miserable as it is. Weather is miserable. Don't you make it much more miserable than that for me. Because I have come to be encouraged, inspired, and go away challenged and blessed. May I say this evening that I've come to remind you of your Christian duties. Just before, not before I forget, but before it is too late, I don't want to make any commercials. But there are a number of books out there, and you have been given a copy of this, which I'm going to come to. This is now available and published in, not in the pseudonym, but in my name, The Mosque and Its Role in the Society. I'm going to come to it. The mosque, majority of the Christians think that the mosque is just like a church, a place of worship. And surely in a democratic society, we have and we must give the right to people to worship. If they are different, they are not Christians, then it's not a problem. They must be given a legitimate right to worship. Well, is mosque a place of worship? What does take place at the mosque? Of course, Channel 4 produced a documentary on the mosque and what is happening inside the mosque, what kind of teaching that they are receiving, and as a result, what is happening in the country. Well, this booklet was written particularly for the mega mosque that is going to be erected in East London, particularly in the borough of Neon. Now, that mosque is going to be worth at least, and that is a very conservative figure, 100 million sterling pounds. Now, don't you believe about 100 million pounds, because it is going to be at least 10 times that amount. That amount is not coming from the British Muslim community only. It is coming from other outside sources, and particularly foreign governments. The biggest religious building in this country, and a Christian religious building, holds 3,000 people. This mosque proposed the plan of holding 70,000 worshippers. Now, how many of you are aware? Can I see a show of hands? How many are you aware of this? Okay. Very few. Thank you. 70,000. It would have a seminary. The mosque itself would hold 70,000 worshippers. It would have a seminary. It would have a conference center. It would have a hotel. It would have Islamic housing for their clergy, for everybody else, and so on. And a huge parking lot. So, the government is probably in favor. The mayor of London, Ken Livingston, is in favor. And they have at the moment a temporary mosque which houses about 2,000 to 3,000 people. Its permission has run out, it has got no license, no planning permission, but they keep on meeting there and everybody has turned a blind eye. Now why that should cause a concern? It should cause you a concern, sitting even in Rugby, because it is going to be built and the particular party who is involved in it is called Tabligh Jamaat, or Jamaat Tabligh. This group is a radical mission group. They are renowned all over the world for its radicalism. They are a clearinghouse for Bin Laden, for Al-Qaeda, for Hamas, for Hezbollah, for every other Islamic terrorist organization that exists around the world. They are the clearinghouse. They have a simple job to do. A terrorist is not a terrorist because he carries a gun or he explodes himself. No, that's not the issue. The real work is done when you indoctrinate somebody. When you prepare him mentally, physically, and spiritually. If he's mentally and spiritually prepared, then the rest is not important. Taking a man and for him blowing himself is the least of the problem then. And that is what is being taught in the majority of the mosques up and down the country. That is why the mosques is very serious. What is the role of a mosque? It's a very simple booklet, and I hope you would take it and enjoy it. And there is another one, and I'm going, the Islamification of Britain. Is Britain being Islamized? And there are plenty of sources here. Where are they drawn from? From the public domain. This, what is written here, is public knowledge in the public domain. Day in, day out, our national press makes it, reveals it, and says, and is crying out, whether you buy a newspaper or not, it is crying out, secularists are demanding an answer from the Christian church, where are you Christians? Isn't it a joke? It is a serious talk. Secularists, atheists, faithless people are demanding an answer. Whatever happened to the Judeo-Christian heritage of this nation, they are saying. What happened to you? Why there isn't any squeak from any church? We have an answer, apparently. So, these are two. I should have brought more, but couldn't carry it away. Now, this put together with this one, and if you've already got this one, that's yours to keep, it's free, but this two with that one was £3. If you don't have £3, don't worry. I am not out to make any money, it's even at a cost, less than cost price. If you don't have £3, take the books, benefit, learn, understand, and rise up. Bend down your knees. Go to the Lord, but at the same time rise up for what has been handed over to you. There were men and women who paid a hefty price for this nation, for you and I to have the freedom and to enjoy the freedom that we are enjoying. They turned around, their end came, their force came to an end, and they turned around and they handed the baton to someone. Who are you going to hand the baton? What sort of a baton, what sort of a nationhood, what sort of a history and a civilization you're going to hand the next generation? Because then we're too busy. I was paying the mortgage, worried about the holidays, and actually it wasn't my business, you know. I thought that the chap in Canterbury would do it. Well, the chappie in the Canterbury has become the chief imam. He suggested that we rather have a Sharia, didn't he? Let me tell you. The parliamentary question, after the 2001, September the 11th, the question was raised in the British Parliament. You can go to the Hansard and read it for yourself. Is Her Majesty's government aware that Mr. Saleh Idris, who is a hand in a glove with the Sudanese government, has bought shares and is a major shareholder in security companies that are employed and contracted by the British government. Namely, Mr. Saleh Idris' company protect and look after 10 Downing Street, the Whitehall, Ministry of Defense, including Buckingham Palace. And where various other sensitive installations in this country. Her Majesty's government's response was,
as Mr. Saleh Idris does not control and make decisions on day-to-day basis, he's just a shareholder, there are no causes for concern. Second question coming on the same line from the same person, but yes, Your Majesty, is government aware that Mr. Saleh Idris has now bought another subsidiary company, which was contracted and still that contract exists to protect vital installations of this country. All the ammunition depots, all the military training units, all the military airports and civil airports, including the nuclear capabilities of this country. Her Majesty's government response remains the same. Ah, we all feel very safe tonight, don't we? You mean to say that a man who is renowned for terrorism, banned by the United States of America entering or putting his foot on the American soil, is actually protecting the British interests? Yes. That's the case. Ah. So, the society is now having a field day, I suppose. Of course, no airport is our property. All the airports have been sold. All the civil airports have been sold to the Spaniards. But the Spaniards are feeling the pressure. And so they want to sell them to somebody else. Now guess who they are going to sell it to. And they want to raise up more money. So, any they were contracted, it was part of the contract when we sold the airports to them, that you would have to pick up the bill for Terminal 5, you would have to do this, you would have to do that. So that is why the Chancellor have raised up all the taxes on these flights, everything else. And now, of course, there is a suggestion that dropping people, I don't know if you drop anybody at Heathrow, but if you just drive in and drop people, there is a plan, possibly under discussion, that may come into effect after 3 or 6 months. £20 charge just to drop in, £3 another charge for airport congestion charges, and everything else. So it's going up. We don't own a single airport in this country. Now that is terrible. But at Heathrow, let me take you, how many people have used Heathrow? Hands up, please. Good. You may know that there is a PA system in the Heathrow Airport where you hear your announcement for your flights and details and so forth. But there is a second PA system which you don't hear. It is inside the airport for the employees. Only the employees hear. About 60% of the employees are Muslim. Yes. Nothing against Muslims, but everything against Islam. Yes. I am unashamedly, willingly declare that Islam is a false religion. And it is the most antichrist system that has ever come on the face of earth since the advent of Christ. There is no other ism, no Buddhism, Hinduism, whatever other isms may there be, none of them as antichrist and as hateful of Christianity as Islam is. In fact, it is mandatory, absolutely mandatory, written in the Quran that a Muslim cannot be a Muslim without hating a Jew and a Christian. It is part of the worship. Worship of Allah is incomplete if a Muslim does not hate. The religion is not based on love. Christian faith, you must not look at Islam with your gospel glasses on and think, oh, but it does say, the words may be there, the concepts and the definitions are radically and dramatically different than what you think they are. So, you have that part of it with Islam. So this Islam, which is absolutely a very antichrist system, is wanting not only to take over, but it is set everything, all its tentacles are spread now out to pressurize and pull and pull and pull. And we are sitting back doing nothing about it. Every generation had to fight its battles. Every single generation. Yes, I have read the end of the book, and it is a glorious victory. But that glorious victory does not come without you playing your role. God has designed it. But God also, in His divine wisdom, has predestined us into good works. And therefore, we got to be responsible for our day and our time. So, come to the airport. This singular system inside, 5 times a day, the prayer call goes out on the loudspeaker inside Heathrow Airport. Ask any chaplain that you come across. He says, is that true? Yes, it is. What happens? Every single Muslim hits the floor. Those who are pilots. Those who are checking in, they tum 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 tum, turn their keys off, they walk out. But what happened? Nadia Oweda, who wore a littered cross, was a huge deal for British Airways. And British Airways appointed and gave it a hangar, one of the plane hangars, to everybody to meet there for the staff as a prayer place. So the Buddhists could go, the Christians could go, if you're a Jew, you know, you could go and you had set up your thing, and they were used by rotation. For the first month it went, and then the Muslims took over. Today that hangar is a mosque. And nobody is allowed to have access to it. This is Heathrow Airport. Yep. So is the case. Well, as far as the mosque is concerned, in East London, there would be Tabligh Jamaat, who has its headquarters in Pakistan. Let me introduce you to Tabligh Jamaat. Tabligh Jamaat were instrumental in forming a group called the Taliban. You remember the Taliban of Afghanistan? Yes. Our boys and our girls are still there, doing a good job. But of course, the rest of the nation is ashamed of them, so they shouldn't put on their uniform. It's really good. Now, they started madrasas. They trained the Taliban, they indoctrinated them, and a group rose called the Taliban. Very thankful to the Lord for the departing of the previous Prime Minister. I don't know what your views are, but he promised 400 million sterling pounds to the madrasas in Pakistan. Did you know that? 400 million. I mean, that's just peanuts. Pittance. Last week there was a meeting in Hounslow. And the government, concerned for Muslims and the radicalism that is penetrating the land and infiltrating every mind, particularly every Muslim family, had allocated 45, not 100, not 1,000, 45 million sterling pounds for the 33 boroughs in London to eradicate or to help restore the radicals back to normal kind of life and normal Islam. You know what happened? The 45, not a single penny anybody, any other society got it. All of it went to the madrasa, mosque, and to the radical groups. The government has come up with another new money, 6 million. There's a meeting taking place next week to discuss that 6 million. Could that 6 million be given to some of the churches for doing some social work in a needy place called London? How did this thing happen? What made it turn around like that? Well, I think we are living in very serious days. So these two books are extremely important. There are green leaflets, which we are completely free, and they are there. There is something about a conference upcoming not far from you here in Swanwick. And you can pass your... If you are on an email, you say, but, oh, this chap came and spoke to me once in the evening. And I didn't hear him much. I couldn't understand. And actually, by the time I digested, that was an old news. So how do I keep up to date? Well, we send out a free, absolutely free email once a week. What's happening in the nation? What's happening in Europe? It's just a title, two or three lines of a blurb, and then a site. So if you click on the site, it will take you to the original newspaper. We sort of scan about 20,000 newspapers and publications per week. And we'll give it to you completely free for no charge, provided you read that news, you're aware, you're alert, and you pray. You pray because prayer is important. Without prayer, we can do nothing. And that is why we're making that service available completely free to anybody who is interested. Let me come to the booklet that is being given into your hands. This is a booklet that it came as a result of, let me just give you a brief background. I was invited, say, I draft a number of parliamentary questions, I acted as a legal advisor to a number of members in the chambers, in the House of Lords, as well as in the House of Commons, and have advised previously to the members of the European Parliament, have done some briefings for the Commission of the Human Rights in the European Parliament. But I was in a meeting and there was a concern about this mosque in East London. So we booked a committee room and we thought the maximum attendance would be about 50 people. Surprise, surprise, we had 160 people turn up. So we had to book another room and alternate, two of the speakers alternate going to different, and then there were question and answers, and leading members from the both houses and from the city people came in to say what was it. And so people asked me, well, what can we do? A number of MPs suggested, they said, well, and I said, well, we need to hold the Muslim community their feet to the fire. We must put before them certain clauses and they must sign up. I said, well, who will do it? And we are bound by our political parties and our agendas and so on. Of course, the Labour Party, if you are a Labour supporter, I'm not against you, but I just want to make this clear. The Labour Party promised and made a manifesto pledge that it will support Islam and will put it on the pedestal. Up against all other religions and particularly against Christianity. So I drafted out a document. This document was then supported by General Batten. He said, he was a very bold man, and he said, Sam, I will take it up. Would you present it? So I said, fine, we accept it. I published this document, and we went to the European Parliament in Strasbourg. Of course, as you know, European Parliament exists in Brussels, as well as in Strasbourg. In Strasbourg, all the decisions are taking place there. Once a month, all the MEPs travel to Strasbourg, the Commission is there, the Council of Ministers is there, and everything apparently is there in South, in France, in Strasbourg. So in the Chambers, on the 13th of December 2006, I presented this document called the Proposed Charter of Muslim Understanding. Challenge the Muslims, and if you turn with me please, and I'm just going to take you very quickly through it, because this is an important document. If you don't have, I still have got two copies here if you are lacking. Anybody there? Yes, thank you. What did I do? I put here, there is a foreword, and if you move on, in page 7, an introduction. The first thing I say, and I've not made any qualms about it, if Islam is a religion of peace, as portrayed by the Muslim, because I start with the case, if case, if it is a religion of peace, as you keep on telling us, bombarding us day and night, we are peace, we are peace, we are peace. Yes, peace with a dagger, with a sword, with a bomb. If you are for peace, then sign up this document. And now, if you look down into the second paragraph, and calling upon, or the third paragraph, we call on all organizations representing the Islamic faith, such as the European Council of Fatwa, the Muslim Council of Britain, Al-Azhar, the organization, everybody included. In the next page, on page 9, you will find we, the undersigned, as representing the Muslim communities in our capacity as leaders, various levels, and all the levels, that is in Islamic speaking from the Sharia point of view, from the equivalent of the archbishop down to the sweeper of the mosque. Everybody is included and named there, that they would sign up. So, we put this as a challenge to the whole of the Islamic world. Now, I think when Mike called me, I said to him, he said, would you come to our church? I said, I have no problem coming. Would your people come? He said, why? I said, the talk that I'm going to give, and any talk that I give, will not be for the faint-hearted. And remember that I'm a wanted man. And so, you're going to take a risk. He said, sure. Well, thank you, Mike. But I'm telling you, the Lord our God whom we worship is the same. He said, I am the same. Bible says in the book of Hebrews, He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. The one who protected Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace, I've seen his hand. If he were not there, and if he were not real, believe me, I would not be standing here. When the time comes, and when he says let go, only then it would happen. Not a second before. Not a second before. So, I present this charter, and if you go on the net and just type EU Muslim Charter St. Thomas, you'll find over 90,000 sites today. All sorts of discussion from Pakistan to Indonesia to Saudi Arabia to Morocco and so on. What? Well, of course, some pretty nasty. I don't want to take you there. But there you go. So, how many people signed up to this document? That's the interesting point. After all the hullabaloo about the peace thing. Remember, that we are so peaceful. And we recognize, and the British government recognized, that Islam is so peaceful that we celebrated 7-7. Does anybody remember 7-7? Yes? Oh, praise the Lord, somebody remembers 7-7. 7-7 was celebrated, and you say, what do you mean? You're just trying to be ugly? No. When 7-7 took place, in September of that year, 2005, the Muslim community proposed. But in a very vague way, we need to celebrate them. How? Well, the people don't understand Islam, and they think we are terrorists, when exactly we are the contrary. We are a religion of peace. Really? Yes. So the government made a budget for them, the mayor made a budget for them, they had about 3 or 6 different centers around London, a mobile unit to explain to the public, and it took place last year, 2006, I beg your pardon. And what was the day they chose? Yes. Exactly. From the 6th to the 9th of July, 3 days. What? Probably celebration. Do you know that not a single Brit objected? Do you know that not a single minister of the gospel wrote, put up, took his pen, picked up his pen, and penned down a letter to any editor of any newspaper, to any MP? Nobody, nobody, absolutely nobody. Do you see where we are? And to our shame, if I may add, the majority of us didn't even know that it was taking place. And the speakers, every single speaker was a radical Muslim. And poo-pooing the whole thing about these 7-7 said, no, you just misunderstand Islam. This is what it is. And one day we are going to rule you. Well,
if we sleep, that's exactly what would happen. This nation is right now under judgment. How many people signed up this document?
Zero. Zero. What happened?
Well, just going to the European Parliament. The British Parliament was interested. There was a lot of material. And then Carl Thomas, a very famous and very well-known columnist in the United States, who is a columnist for about 600 newspapers, he wrote in his article on me and on this charter was published by 600 newspapers, and there was quite an uproar. And so the British Parliament thought, well, why not? We'll have it a go. So they asked me, they said, well, would you like to launch this thing here? Sure. And so we gathered. Only to find on the last day, on the D-Day, as they say, at 9 o'clock, the meeting was at 11 o'clock. At 8:30, my phone rang, and on the other hand, the Piero was going to chair this meeting. He said, I'm terribly sorry, but I have got some very serious concerns have been raised, and therefore we are deferring the meeting. Deferring the meeting, my lord? He said, yes. But well, how about everybody? He said, well, by parliamentary rule, we have a quick, as you know, Sam, inside internal communication system, so everybody has been informed. Nevertheless, some people may appear, and therefore I think I require you there. But what is the concern? He said, well, we're not enough security, blah, 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 this, that, and that. All right. I'll be there at 11 o'clock. The Sun newspaper was approached. I know you don't read it, but the nation reads it. And the editor has said, I'm going to put it on the front page, sign up! Exclamation mark. Of course it didn't happen. So I went, and there were a few people there. We were in this committee room. Some of the peers came, others the researchers came. Leading biases from the city came. So a small group. And interestingly enough, a representative of a Saudi came from the Muslim World League. Muslim World League is the biggest, the most powerful Islamic organization in the world, almost with an unlimited budget. And there, their director came, who spoke five languages. He would turn around, speak one language, look at your friends, then another language, turn back, you know, and so on. Very, very sharp man. So this document was introduced, and the presiding chairman said, you know, made a few comments, and then handed over. So he looks at the document and he said, well, this document is completely irrelevant. Absolutely irrelevant. Why is it so? Because in Islam, religion gives freedom, recognizes all other religions, and it is based on the religious freedom. No compulsion in religion. If you look in page 10, article 1, you'll find that no, and then in article 3, you'll find no compulsion in religion. So article 1 and 3. You know, there are only 10 articles in this. He said, no religious freedom is Islamic. So you've got it completely out of context and you've got it wrong. I turned around to him and said, sure. If that is the case, you know, of course, now we were almost powerless because, you know, such a powerful argument everybody else thought there. I said, sir, would you kindly explain to us, if Islam is for religious freedom, why is the law of apostasy in every single Islamic country, every single Islamic society? Freedom and law of apostasy don't go hand in hand, does it? If you're free, you must allow people to choose their religion. Ah, he said, well, you know, because we don't want people to insult religion. I said, fair enough. You represent the Saudis. There are 4 million Christians in Saudi Arabia. Would you go back to the Saudi authorities and ask them to allow and issue a license of one church up against 1,000 mosques that you built in any Western country? Not only Britain. We want to take a stock inventory of
a number of mosques, the 1,000 mosques that you have built, and up against every 1,000 will beat one church. Freedom of religion. Would you allow the Bible? Would you allow Christian missionaries all over the Gulf, in every other Islamic country, would you allow the Muslims to choose or discard, not to choose Christianity, but to discard Islam of their own accord if they wanted to, without any impunitive charges? Oh, the man was shaking. He said, oh, no, you know. Okay. So, I said, which part of these articles don't you like? And which, these are all subject to discussion. Which one would you like to modify? He said, well, they are all lacking, you know, and they are not really, I can't point out. So at random, we just turned, and it came on Article 6. So turn to page 15, and I want to show it to you. I'm taking you through a parliamentary discussion so that you get a feel of what it is like to be there sometimes as an outsider. Article 6. Based on acceptance, Mike, you're keeping the clock, right? How much time do I have? What is the time? No, but what is the time now? Oh, I have plenty of time, praise the Lord. I was just worried that you were getting tired of me. Now, on Article 6, based on the acceptance of equality of all mankind, brotherhood of all, and the freedom and the sanctity of all human life, and based on the principle that whosoever slays on a man, one man is as though he has slain the whole humanity, all acts of terrorism are prohibited, shunned, and outlawed. No suicidal mission undertaken for whatever the reason is, justified. No violent physical jihad operation will be regarded as sacred. No one who chooses to die in such an operation will be regarded as a martyr. I said, what's the problem with that one? Would you sign up to that? Only that article? He said, you know, the problem isn't suicide mission. I said, wait a second. First of all, no Islamic authority, either in this country or anywhere in the world, have declared the 9/11 martyrs as apostates, excommunicated them out of Islam. The 4 or 5 volunteers of London, nobody has declared them such. In Spain, nobody has declared them. So would you start with declaring them as apostates, non-Muslims? Excommunicate them from Islam. Because your religion is a religion of peace. Didn't you say that? We are mistaken. He said, it's not exactly the case. The problem isn't about martyrdom. The problem isn't suicide. The problem is the British and American government's foreign policy. I said, what? So yes, it is a foreign policy. Look at Afghanistan. Look at Iraq. Look at Palestine. Look at what's happening there. If were we to withdraw from there, none of these things would have happened. It is a foreign policy. And what did we hear in that committee room? Hear. Because of course we didn't have everybody as a friend there. Some people were in opposition, they wanted to go. So the presiding chairman said to me, Matthewson, with due respect, sir, it is foreign policy, you said. Yes. Tell us when, how old is the Quran? And Lord Pearson looked at me and he thought, surely this is irrelevant, you have gone berserk. But he just looked at me, gave me a look, and I looked at him and he understood, just give me a moment, please, give me a latitude, some latitude. He said, how old is the Quran? The guy looked at me and he said, what? I said, yes, you heard me. How old is the Quran? And I'm not talking about its eternity and all that in the history of mankind. He said, at least 1400 years old, at least 14th century. Sure, good. You're sure of that? Yes.
Does it say in Surah 5, verse 51, verse 85 or 82,
لتجدن أشد الناس عداوة للذين آمنوا اليهود.
All you who have believed, you will find the most venomous enemies of those who have believed. The most poisonous, the most radical, the most worst of them are the Jews.
Yes. Is it recorded in Surah 5, verse 51? يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا تتخذوا اليهود والنصارى أولياء لكم بعدهم أولياء بعض.
Or you who have believed, do not take the Jews and the Christians as your friends, for they are friends of one another, and whosoever takes them as one, he becomes one of them. In other words, he is entitled to the punishment from Allah.
Does it say in Surah 60 verse 1, يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا تتخذوا عدوي وعدوكم أولياء ولا تلقون بهم المودة.
Oh you who have believed, do not take my enemies, Allah has enemies. He says, don't take my enemies and your enemies as friends and show them no affection, no love.
Yes. Does it say in Surah 60 verse 4, ونكفركم به وَقَدْ بَدَى بَيْنَنَا وَبَيْنَكُمَ الْعَدَاوَةَ وَالْبُغْدَى أَبَدًا. Enmity. We declare you as kafir. And enmity has started between us and hostility forever.
Did you say that? Yes. Who are these? Enemies of Allah? Yes. Jews and Christians? Yes.
Does it say in Surah 98 verse 6? هم شر البرية خالدين في نار جهنم أبدا.
They are going to be in hellfire forever and ever, and they are the worst of the creatures that Allah has created.
And who are these worst creatures? Jews and the Christians.
Yes. On and on and on. Until the man was tired. Ah! It wanted me to stop and say no more.
I was exposing the Quran. Would you kindly explain to this esteemed house and this esteemed gathering that this is Quranic? Can you tell us, in the first century, the 7th century, first century Islamic calendar, the 7th century,
America, where was America? Was America and Britain occupying Afghanistan and Iraq? Was Israel occupying Palestine?
How was it? Tell us, please. Was it the 7th century the problem that we hated the Muslims and we were out to kill them? What foreign policy are you talking about? Now, everybody woke up. With due respect, this is your Sharia. This is your Islam. This is what you want to hide away. The reality is very different. This is nothing foreign policy. Are the words of the Quran eternal? Yes, they are. Would you declare these people as kafirs?
No.
He said, I have no right to issue the fatwa. I said, well, go to your boss. He said, well, our director, he's one of the princes, he's in Mecca. I said, well, sure, write to him. You know what? Of course, as a result, I faced a little bit of a trouble, a little problem, don't worry about it. But for the first time in the house, people woke up that this is a religion, a system, the whole thing which is out to dominate and to govern, demand some answers. We went to one or two other places. We couldn't handle it. I said, what about all those abusive verses? What are they? Do you believe them? Do you practice them? He said, well, they are the words of Allah. I didn't write them, yes. So Allah wrote them, yes. And, well, we are bound by it. Okay.
And you're telling us that your religion is peace? No way. Absolutely no way. Later that day, presiding chairman said, well, you know, we're going to defer this meeting in April and we're going to have a proper lunch. I said, my lord, forget about it. Why? Because you're not going to get there, and the Saudis and the Muslim community are going to be, if need be, by every single newspaper in this country. He said, not the Sun. I said, well, you watch. You watch. Every single newspaper, no newspaper is going to write about it. I said, all right. The date was set in April 2007, and we went. Extra security on the house, you know, the intelligence was informed, extra policemen, car, you know, uniformed and civilian and so on, bigger room. How many journalists came? Every single journalist said they were coming. How many turned up? Apart from my friend Melanie Phillips, not a single one. Not a single one. And that's nothing for me or against me. It shows you the state of a nation, where we are. This booklet will tell you where we are and how far we have gone down the road. How many of you have heard of Enron Company that went down in Texas, right? Enron. They were the first Western company to introduce Islamic finance. I mean, what? Just introduce you to a bit of Islamic finances, and then I'm interested to take up your questions. The Americans said, $10, $20 a barrel, we're not making any profit. The Texan people need to make a little bit of profit. Raise up $10. The Saudis said, well, for your name, for our sake of good relationship, yes, we'll do so. So, of course, they reap the benefit. Then it went to 50, then 60, then 80, then $100. Now, the biggest bill that every government is paying, and we can't afford, it is unsustainable, unsurmountable now, the energy bill. Every day we are paying more money towards it and we can't afford it. What happened? 5 years ago, they began to pour money because they didn't need to do anything. This was yesterday $1, today it is $10, then the day after $100. It's the same thing. The cost didn't differ, production, overhead, nothing went different. It was the same price. Their profit just pushed up. What did they do? They picked up the difference and began to invest and lend it to the West. That's where the credit crunch came. The American banks began to offer money to anybody who had an address, who didn't have an address. Anybody just needed to walk through the door and didn't need to produce any ID, didn't need to produce any proof, just needed to have to buy a home and said, here's the money, he's going to buy a home. Buy a house somewhere. And so a lot of thugs came in, bought houses, rented it to somebody else, and then collected the rent, didn't pay the bank a thing because they were untraceable, there were no money, they were nowhere to be found, they were just gangs. He did it. When they finished housing and there were no houses to be sold, there was builders began to build because everybody was buying. Then they went to something else, then they were getting onto money. Then there was nobody to give more money to, so buy, and everything. Economy is booming. But where? It was all false. It was completely shifting trend. There was nothing real about it. So the crunch came. Now, the private investment companies are actually not, they raise money from the banks. And they now are saying, well, why should we talk to the banks? We will go directly to the investor himself, who happens to be Arab, Middle Eastern, Islamic countries, Gulf, Saudi, and others. They have all the money. So then they would produce the money. And now they are giving it. So they are saying, okay, we'll bail you out. We will bail you out. Your banks are failing, we'll bail you out. No problem. How? Well, we'll give you the money. After all the negotiation work, with just one little thing. It's one little page here. These are the conditions. You know all the money you want. Everything is yours. As it is, you are the boss, you will control it, you run it, we are the investors. But we have a little condition. It will be run on this basis. Okay. The secularists and the non-Christians and others, including some Christians, don't see any difference. They say, this is a money market, and you've got to be wise, and you've got to make profit, and you just got to invest. It's a deal, fine. And another one. And another one. And that's where you, your freedom, and the gospel is going to be sold. It's a new pipe. Plan in the pipeline. Let me tell you first as a preamble. 20 years ago, I said, traveled up and down the country, I said to a lot of people, a lot of things, and people thought, this is never going to happen. This is Britain. This is ridiculous. You've just gone insane. Everything I said then is now everyday newspapers. It's in public domain. It's happening. All of it. It doesn't need a rocket scientist to understand what I'm telling you. So what next? The next is very simple. The dollar is going to be ditched. The sterling is going to die. European currency, the euro, is dead. Finished. You're looking at it. You're looking something like at the top ceiling 10 years. It's less than that. Don't want to frighten you more than I have already. But that's what you're looking at. You're looking at an Islamic currency. An Islamic currency. Now, we buy everything, a unit of exchange is a dollar. They are going to say, aha, we are not going to buy it in dollar any longer. If you want to buy our goods, you have to buy it in our unit of exchange. And that's an Islamic currency. And we set the price for it. It's not going to be pegged to anything. Sterling, dollar, euro, yen, rubbish. Non-existent. Already a mini project has been tried. And that is why the dollar has begun to sink. And every day it's losing its value. It's an automatic devaluation of it. The moment the market in London is flooded with Islamic money. When the present Prime Minister was the Chancellor of Exchequer, he introduced the Islamic Sharia code for banking and for taxation. All British banking laws and taxation laws have been made Sharia compliant under Gordon Brown. From year 2002, by the way. It isn't new. And everything that I'm telling you is substantiated, and I don't need to go anywhere. You just put on the button and end up on the, your thing on the internet, it will come up. So what's happening? That means we are going to encounter a problem. Their decisions about finances, the biggest issue in the West. We are not a religious society. We are not a moral society. We are a financial orientated society, like it or not. The highest bidder takes it all. So, our freedom is at stake now. Why am I worried? Am I worried about the price of oil? No. Am I worried about the trains won't run? I don't care. What am I worried about? This is my concern, and a major concern. There is coming a day when they are going to say, no gospel preaching. No.
No.
And you say, no, that can't be. Well, you'll wait and see. You'll wait and see. So, we are in such a tizzy. Switzerland has bowed. Switzerland is going to accept Islamic Sharia banking. Britain, the four banks are all now going towards the Sharia banking. HSBC. We went, me and Barrister Andrea Williams, my colleague on the Christian, the Lawyers Christian Fellowship and Christian Concern for Our Nation, went to the HSBC bank. Said, we want to register an account. Can we open an account? And they said, okay. So we wrote, Christian Concern for Our Nation. Oh, the manager said, well, I need to consult. Went in the girl to the manager. The manager came out. We have a little problem, if you don't mind. And so we don't like to upset our clients. So what is the problem? We're Christian Concern. A lot of our clients are... What? So, okay, let me consult the directors. I'm going to phone London. After about an hour, we're sitting there waiting for their answer. They made their deliberations. They came back and they said, sorry, we can't take this account. Either change the name or withdraw. So we are going to do nothing of the sort. Is the Christian Concern for Our Nation a problem? Yes, it is. I said, how about HSBC offering Sharia banking, Islamic mortgage, Islamic insurance, all of this isn't a problem? Well, we're not here to discuss those issues. And until today, at HSBC, we don't have a bank account called Christian Concern for Our Nation. That's it. Now, the Muslims are discovering a new thing. That the number of churches and the denominations don't need to be mentioned. You go in, 30 people. At the church of senior citizens, 20 people, another 30 people walk in and they say, okay. And so, all by the voting system, it works, isn't it? What are the prerequisites? Well, we just require you to believe in God. Oh, we believe in God. Okay. Can become members of the church. Fine. They become members of the church. And you know what? We are now 30. You're 20. Your vote don't matter. And if it mattered, we are going to outnumber you. So we declare this church will invite an imam. And so they do. We declare that this church, now from next month, it will be a mosque. So it will be. It isn't any longer my church and we are safe here. Believe me. Sounds to you almost extremely grim, pessimistic, and there is no hope in it. The hope is there because the God that we worship is a God of hope. But when men decline their responsibilities, when they lay down and they don't follow, when they hold, put their hand on the plow and look back, it can't do anything to anybody. The Lord is not in need of you, me, and my services, your services. But the state of the nation is at such a stage. Muslim doctors informing the Muslim community about who consults them, about their daughters, whether they are on a pill, whether they are not on a pill, whether they are having a relationship, not any diseases, anything it is. Muslim policemen and Muslim police association protect the culprits in this country who commit and hook in their daughters and sons or transport them and so on. It's been a big news for days and days and days unending, all the disappearing people and forced marriages and so forth. This is 1993. The Independent wrote a huge article. 6,000 girls disappeared annually from this country. For a period of 3 months to 3 years. It isn't new. We are the first one to go to Scotland Yard and say there are human organs being exchanged and sold by Muslims. They didn't believe us. And then they came after 6 years and they found it was true. Slave trade.
conducted by the Muslim community. Yes, it's going on. Islamic banking, yes. Islamic Sharia courts, yes. What else?
I know I'm a Protestant. I know Christ exists. I'm not for that. But the idea, the concept that the signal to be removed, the crucifix, from every place, because it's an anathema, it's a curse, it's an abhorrence to a Muslim, just makes me feel that where are we?
Let me take you to Brixton and any area in London, but let me just take you to Brixton. It's on Friday. No parking regulation whatsoever, none. Any car can park anywhere, because all those parking wardens know that these are Muslim cars. Nobody gets a ticket because they are praying. It's in the mosque. Take the KICC, Matthew Shimolo's church in Hackney. Well, of course, it's now closed and they have to repack up and go somewhere else. But here is the church where I'm standing. Over there, in there is a bus coming. And what happened? They changed the regulation. On Sunday, there is no parking regulation in London. Except in that area, they applied parking regulations. So if you park your car as a church member, you'll get a fine. The buses, their routes were changed. Why? The buses were not Christians. They were somebody else. They were some other religion. What happened? The bus would not stop at the church, would stop a mile away and a half a mile down the road after passing the church. No stop at the bus. Though all the members wanted to use London transport buses. No. There was different regulation. Do you know what it means? Do you know that we pay money towards Islam? Do you know that Islam is being propagated at your expense? It's the taxpayers' money. Do you know how much is being siphoned? I don't think the majority of the British people know. I don't think so. What is the solution? The solution is in the gospel. It's in the cross of Christ. It's not our Britishness that needs to be displayed. I'm not saving, wanting to save Britain, per se. No. It is a wonderful country. It has done great things. And we are now forced into something called guilt and sins of the past. I'm not responsible for that. And actually, we didn't do everything wrong. Whoever says that is a liar. I'm sorry. You know? But somehow, and forgive me for saying that, I'm not racist, but white people are under condemnation, you know. With almost feeling like, you know, they have got to change their pigment, their skin, their color, their something. I'm going to tell you something. Because I can say it because my color is right, my features are right, I've got a beard, and I'm different. I think this has been one of the greatest nations in the history. And we still have a contribution to make. But we have gone silent. The Muslims are demanding in Oxford. When we shout the prayer call, Allahu Akbar, Allah, we want no church bells to ring. It's under discussion. I'm not fighting for church bells, but I'm fighting for a concept behind it. Where is it going to end? When and where? It will start in Oxford, go to Birmingham, and then in the whole nation. And it won't be for three times, it will be five times a day. It will be too late then. It will be too late. But that's what you're looking at. That's exactly what it is. But how in the world a million people, let's say there are 2 million, big deal, control 60 million people? You know how?
because you and I don't pray. You and I say nothing. You and I not exercise our rights. We don't object. We say, well, why should I be the ugly duckling? It is not about you. It's not about your children. It's not even about the next generation or the generation after. It is about the gospel. It is about the gospel. Will you stand up and speak? If the Lord made you his mouth, and if you would not speak, you know, we just read a little bit. Let me rephrase that passage from the scriptures, and with that I will close and give you opportunity if there are time for question and answer. If salt is no longer salty, then what needs to be done with it? What must be done with the salt? Thrown out? Thrown it under feet. If something that you have, if this pen is useless, it doesn't write, it's dry, it's dead, finished, would I carry it or would throw it away? The question to you today, tonight, in this history lecture, church history, are you church history or are you history makers? Are you the people who will set the agenda for history, for generations to come, and people will look back and say, yes, there was a church in Rugby that stood up. After all, the great leader of India, Mohandas Gandhi, whatever his name was, he got all the Christian concept from the Christian church. It was Westbourne Baptist Church, Westbourne Park, in Baptist Church, where the elders decided in that time that they were going to go into civil disobedience because of the educational policy of the government. He picked up the newspaper, he was a barrister, trained in England, he learned, he wrote, he said, oh, that is the way forward. Nonviolent. He didn't invent it. It was not his geniusness. It was the church and a Christian and a biblical concept. Everything that Gandhi did was a biblical concept. He stole biblical principles from us. Some people stood up. A man stood up and said, no slavery. Somebody else stood up and said something else. Would you tonight turn to the Lord and say, Lord, I want to be counted. I want my life to be counted for something. I don't know what it is, Lord. I may only end up writing one letter to an editor of a local newspaper. I may end up just being in my room, in my closet, praying, interceding for the Muslims and for the protection of this nation and to champion your gospel. I don't know how, Lord, but I am willing to do it. Lord, I am available. Lord, I want to surrender myself to you afresh. Lord, I want to renew my love to you. Lord, I am part of history. I am old and dark and ready to be dumped because I feel antiquated, part of a museum, a history. I didn't come here tonight to give you a history lecture. I didn't want to tell you how glorious the history has been. And those were the golden days. Better is yet to come if you and I will be faithful. Can the Lord count on you? If you were the 12 disciples and the mission was committed to you, would you have done what the 12 did? Or rather the 11? Would you have gone home, paid your mortgage, he said, that's not my concern. It's too hard. It's too tough. Good. We had a good chap. Or maybe he hasn't got a wife. He hasn't got a children. And he's just another suicide mission ready to die. I can't help him. But at least it was interesting. No. 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 My time is gone. I'm going to ask the chairman to come to moderate the question and answer session. But let me leave you with one word. Would you kindly turn to the Gospel of John chapter, please? Chapter 13. Gospel of John, chapter 13. My Bible is over there. Is there a Bible here? Yes, sir. Thank you. Is it chapter 13 or chapter 12? Just a minute. Gospel of John. Chapter 12, verse. When it is Jesus washed the feet of the disciples. Chapter 13, that's right, I thought so. And you located the verse. Sorry? No. Jesus, a person, has bathed. Okay, needs. Okay. When he finished, from verse 12, when he had finished washing their feet, Jesus put on his clothes and returned to his place. Did you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, very interesting, very interesting, much significant. He told the disciples, you call me teacher and Lord, and so I am. You think I'm a teacher, a rabbi, and you call me Lord. But if, and now he corrected very gently their understanding or their misunderstanding, but if I, your Lord and your teacher, not your teacher first, your Lord first. We have come to the Lord as a Savior. We need him as a comforter. We need him as a healer. We need him as a shepherd. We need him as a restorer, lifter of our heads. We need him in every way as our refuge, everything. Sometimes he's this, sometimes he's that. He's like a resource center, a supermarket. When I want, I go and get. The end result. One little word. Is he the Lord of your life today? Does he own everything? Have you fully back with him? Can he say yes when you call upon him? Because you don't regard him as a teacher and a Lord, but you regard him as a Lord and a teacher. Chairman, over to you.
I'd like to thank Sam very much for that talk, which was both alarming and challenging, I'm sure. Now, I'm sure there must be those who've got questions to ask. Don't be shy.
Have you any idea why the Germans didn't turn up on the occasion
when... usually there are circulars go out, and it's very, very difficult to explain why, but journalists, many of them, they write very boldly, but increasingly they are being marginalized. They wouldn't get to write in their columns. They would face difficulties, they would face discipline, and some of the boards which associations are now being taken over, believe it or not, you know. So the media companies are being funded also by our friends. And so it is becoming increasingly difficult to say anything. And it isn't only journalists, but in any profession today. Through and through. And of course, we are going to feel the pinch more and more and more. The squeeze, we're being squeezed, you know. And at the right time, they are now, we are all surrounded like that. At the right time, they are going to squeeze. We're going to give in. And the norm is now to give in. All the time. Nobody reacts. Yes, sir. No, sir. I did. My question is answered. It's only about 34 or 35 pages. I want you to pick it up and read it. And then you will formulate your own view. But it is this book, let me tell you, as a part of an answer, Islamically speaking, it is indisputable. Because it is not written from a Christian perspective, it is written from a legal perspective and an Islamic perspective. So no Muslim imam can read this and say, no, that's not true. He has only one way to go, and he says, yes, 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 yes. So.
I think you were first.
Taking on board all you said previously.
Yes, sir.
How do the Christians relate your religious work? How do, without getting scared, without becoming insecure, how do you show grace to some of the Christians you work with?
Well, thank you for the question. We already are scared, believe it or not. Because if we weren't, we would share. And sharing is not difficult. Muslims are mostly interested in religion. Very religious. Very attracted to piety, pious language. And so if they see you different, they will come and talk to you, and you can go and talk to them. Religion isn't difficult, you know. And particularly people living in this country, they ought to be aware of the nature of this country, this society, and so forth. You know, it's not important that, you know, I mustn't take the idea that I have to readjust, shape everything because to accommodate. No, it's much more simpler. If he is in your place of work, then what? How more simpler it could be? What do you believe? You know, I believe this, that, and other. By the way, have you ever read this book? You know, our civilization is built on this thing. It is done, done. Explain something to him. Why do you ask him hard questions? What is the problem? And let it be an opening. We relate to a Muslim as a sinner, as a man and as a woman who is lost and cannot be saved except through the words of grace, ministry of grace, and through the life of Christ, his substitution, his vicarious death on the cross of Calvary, through his resurrection. It is a covenant theology. Without that, he cannot be saved. So, why is it so hard?
I think one of the points you made when you spoke at Hinckley was that Muslims themselves are oppressed by their own system.
Exactly.
And provided they don't have to publicly talk about Christianity in front of other Muslims who might not like it, they are in fact quite open and interested.
They are in a police society. We are actually living in a police society. It is, we can give them portion of the scriptures, we could invite them, we could talk to them, you know, and so on. As soon as you open your mouth, the Lord will give you grace. Yes, of course, because others are watching him, and he will suffer as a result. But let's not shy away from suffering. Ours is a faith of cross. Ours is a life of self-denial and sacrifice. Jesus said, whosoever wants to follow me, let him pick up his cross and follow me. We mustn't forget that.
I think the gentleman here was there.
On the bestseller list, maybe there's been a book by Ibn Hussein called The Islamist, which
yes.
Is a whole spectrum of moderate to extreme movements. Is that book a fair representation of the thing?
It is a subjective view of Ibn Hussein, and he has become the best ambassador for so-called moderates in Islam and so on. Now, there is a doctrine called taqiyya, which means legitimate lying, deception by license. And Islam allows that. And what Islam does is throws a confusion. Because I was a radical, now I am no longer a radical, but I am still a Muslim. Islam is not what you are preaching, what I am taught. So we are entangled now between Ahmad and Hussein, between Muhammad and Mahmud, between Ali and so-and-so. What's the big deal? If Islam, it isn't that, first of all, Ali Hussein does not have an authority to issue a fatwa. Muhammad said, I am the most moderate man. Is he? Was he? Really? The whole of Islam is moderation. If the Islam of the Quran is moderation, then where are the fundamentalists getting there? What sources are they getting from? It is all. And it isn't a matter of interpretation. it is the real Islam. Moderate Islam is a figment of somebody's imagination. It does not exist. It is an illusion. The whole of it is illusion. It is saying to you something, making you believe something, which does not exist. So, if moderate Islam were to survive, show me one example of it. Where in the world moderate Islam? Show me the moderate Muslims and their political agenda. The moderate Muslims and their religious agenda. The moderate Muslims and their successful mosques. Where? Which one?
I think you said that the Quran permits, if not encourages, Muslims to lie if it will help the cause.
Absolutely. It is sanctioned by the Quran. And that doctrine, to a great with some sort of an expansion, it's been explained here in the booklet on the mosque and its role in the society. You know, what is the doctrine of dissection? It is standard here, stated, quoted with the scholars and the background and from the Quranic references.
Yes, you
next.
What's your opinion on Zakaria Oxford when it comes to transforming that
from whom?
People.
Yes. Well, let me rephrase your question. The Christian imam there, so-called, assumed with the frock, you know, that he's a bishop. Anybody who endorses that cannot be actually Christian. I'm sorry. He says he doesn't find it any trouble, and he found majority of these answers. You see, this Oxford thing, again, it has its history. In 1993, December the 13th, the Crown Prince went to Oxford and to the Islamic Society, the Islamic Mission headquarters there, of which he happens to be a patron. Now let me explain to you, a patron, if there was a convent, okay, and somebody said, I'd like to join a convent, there are basic requirements, prerequisites. You cannot join a convent and live the way that you want. Now in the same way, you cannot be a patron of an Islamic society, of an Islamic mission center, world mission center, and remain a Christian or a defender of the faith, by the way. Now the Turkish imam has said it, and it has been published in many an Arabic newspapers and across the world, that the Crown Prince had recited the Shahada in their presence and accepted Islam. Well, that is in a secret. I'm sorry if you didn't know that. But he just said then, on December the 13th, 1993, and then subsequently 1994, that he said, I found all the spiritual answers in the Quran. And prior to that, one of the other bishops, and it was so interesting that the Times made it a huge inside page and wrote a whole article about it, and it happened to be a bishop, and I'll send you his details if you are interested. He asked all the clerks that he oversaw, what are they called? There is a technical name. The curates, the vicars, there is what? Yes, there is a clergy, but there is a technical word, I'm looking for it. Anyway, he advised them that during Easter, that was in 1993 by the way, during Easter, they should not come and read and meditate from the scriptures, but they should read and meditate from the Quran. And so many curates, vicars in that diocese did exactly that. And the newspapers were so horrified, secularists, that they were asking loud and publicly questions to the Christian church. And they printed his photograph and they said it all. So it isn't new. There is a lot of history behind this. He didn't receive any threats. There are some people who are angry that they are going to be disturbed, their morning sleep is going to be disturbed. And it is the secularists who are saying, look, if you want to support these guys, well, why don't you let them come and shout it in your ears? Why should they shout it where we live? Sadly, it is they who have the courage to defend their personal comfort zones and freedom. The Christians did not stand up. The Christians did not stand up.
Will they do it? Will they get what they want?
Well, the permission is, the planning is there. They are going to submit the planning for the application in September. So there is still time to gather momentum. But they will, yes. You know what happened in Oxford? The Saudis came and they said, this is an ugly city. We want to decorate it for you. How? We'll build domes everywhere. And they did. And the Greenland, which was a patch, was never ever given to anybody, suddenly it's now been given to the Muslims, and a mosque came in. Three counselors objected, and they saw, well, they lost their case, they all are now in their millions, and what happened? The other four counselors who supported, I don't know how, but they become very rich suddenly. Islamic College is now on the Greenland. A mosque is standing there, and the city is adorned by domes everywhere. And this was in the Times and Independent, in the editorial, adorning Oxford. I mean, what a thing. And we're talking about now something like 13, 14 years ago, 1993, 1994. And so that is going to happen. In East London, the mosque does give a prayer call out twice a day, and particularly on Friday, but soon it will become all official.
I'm a little concerned as to what time your train goes.
I don't know, but I'm going to take his question.
Okay.
Yes. In fact, very interesting, when you go tonight to watch BBC and the news comes up and a beam comes out and goes like that, and you can't see it very fast, so you have to video it, and then see it in a slow motion. When you see it in a slow motion, you would realize what I'm telling you. The beam that comes out and writes some justice, it is the word Allah. Okay? So world over through the satellite, the BBC when it comes in, the first thing comes as the news is Allah.
Subliminal message.
Yes. But no, you can actually watch it. You video it, you see it, and you will remember that, yes, I did say that. Yes. By the way, I'm going to, Mr. Chairman, may I ask you to be in charge of those books over there? And, you know, whatever is the proceeding, I don't care. I want you to take it and to be blessed by it. As I said, if you can afford £3, fair enough. If you don't, it doesn't matter. The Lord will look after us some way or other.
And
please, make most of it.
And what about this website you mentioned, or email, newsletter? How do we get that?
Just write down your email, give that list, anybody who wants it, hand it to yourself or to Mike, and then forward it to me, and you will be put on the list and you will get it. Okay? And on this site, there is a Pilco Press on this site. You are going to get, we have made a response. I've made a response to the Common Word, the 138 Muslim scholars who wrote to the Pope and to all the Christian leaders, and 300 of them have signed up to it. Tomorrow, that response, or day after, is going to be on the net, it will be in the press, it will be everywhere. So, I know I remain absolutely unworthy of your prayers. But prayers I must have. If you would be gracious enough to remember me in your prayers. And I'm not asking for all night prayers. But just 1 minute. Every time you have a meal, you say grace. I want 1 minute of prayer every day, 20 seconds, three meals, 20 seconds at each meal. That would be a minute. Pray for me, pray for my ministry if the Lord brings you to me to your memory. Pray for the advance of the gospel. Pray for the protection that we as a nation we are under judgment. That yet the Lord will spare us. Yet He will be merciful. Yet we will see a better day. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.